We have entered into the third lesson on meeting yourselves in the Psalms. And this lesson three is going to be meeting our preserved spirit, soul, and body in the Psalms. And so just to remind us of the proposition that we are working from the class number one, we seek to prove with this class that the psalmists describe features and characteristics comparable to the old man. Equally, the psalmists help to us to see the sanctified whole of man's spirit, soul, and body to be preserved. And then finally, on next week, the psalmists help to provide us with spiritual solutions to stay preserved and to combat the influence of our old man and Satan's attempts to keep us there for as long as possible. And so we have so far have met our old self in the Psalms. On last week, we met our sanctified self in the Psalms, and hopefully we learned a valuable lesson in last week. In last week's class, that even though that we are sanctified to God Himself, remember Psalm 4, verse number 3, that even though that we're sanctified to God, it doesn't remove life's distresses. It doesn't remove life's afflictions. It doesn't remove life's troubles, nor does it remove life's sorrows. But rather, God equips through His wisdom to teach us how to handle these issues of the heart in the most righteous way, thus demonstrating an answer to those who are unrighteous that there is a way to properly overcome them and remain faithful. And so tonight's lesson, as we refer back to 1 Thessalonians 5 and verse number 23, briefly, we'll see where the third installment is going to come from. Look there, if you will, in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse number 23. And what does the Bible say? Somebody be kind to read that to us.
Now may the God of peace Himself sanctify you completely, and may your whole spirit, soul, and body be preserved blameless at the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ.
So here the Apostle Paul is desiring that the church of Thessalonica's whole spirit, soul, and body be preserved blameless. It is with this in mind that we turn to the Psalms and meet our preserved spirit, soul, and body. And so as we return where we left off on last class in Psalm 51, go back to Psalm 51 as we made reference to David and his sin with Bathsheba and how David is lifting up his voice in a penitent manner to have his sins washed away. And so we see in Psalm 51 how David was able to preserve his spirit, soul, and body and be found blameless. We made reference to blameless as free from blame, to be pure, or to be innocent. Let's just read that summary and make a few comments and then get right into our lesson. Look at Psalm 51 and let's read it. Have mercy upon me, O God, according to thy loving kindness, according unto the multitude of thy mercies, tender mercies, blot out my transgressions. Wash me thoroughly from my iniquity, and cleanse me from my sin. For I acknowledge my transgressions, and my sin is ever before me. Against thee, thee only, have I sinned, and done this evil in thy sight, that thou mightest be justified when thou speakest, and be clear when thou judgest. Behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and sin did my mother conceive me. Behold, thou desire truth in the inward parts, and in the hidden part thou shalt make me to know wisdom. Purge me with hyssop, and I shall be clean. Wash me, and I shall be whiter than snow. Make me to hear joy and gladness, that the bones which thou hast broken may rejoice. Hide thy face from my sins, and blot out all mine iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. Cast me not away from your presence, and take not thy Holy Spirit from me. Restore unto me the joy of thy salvation, and uphold me with thy free spirit. Then will I teach transgressors thy ways, and sinners shall be converted unto thee. Deliver me from blood guiltiness, O God, that God of my salvation, and my tongue shall sing aloud of thy righteousness. O Lord, open now my lips, and my mouth show forth thy praises. For thou desirest not sacrifice, else would I give it. Thou delightest not in burnt offering. The sacrifices of God, notice, are a broken spirit, and a broken and a contrite heart. O God, thou wilt not despise. Do good in thy good pleasure unto Zion. Build thy walls of Jerusalem. Then shall thou be pleased with the sacrifices of righteousness, with the burnt offering and whole burnt offering. Then shall they offer bullocks upon thine altar. We see here in Psalm 51, we have a brief summary of all the elements of if we fall. Notice I put the condition if, because it does not demand that we fall. Remember in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, he says, take heed lest you fall. And there's a way that God will always give us a way of escape. And that it's our job to find that way to escape and bear through it. And so we think about here, if we fall into sin, the psalmist here teaches us how to revive the spirit within us, how to revive the soul within us, and how to revive the body within us that is sanctified again. And how is it revived? Broken. We notice there, go back to verse number 10, where it says, create in me a clean heart, and O God, renew a right spirit within me. And notice if you drop down to verse number 17, the sacrifices of God are what? What are the sacrifices of God? A broken spirit and a what?
Contrite heart.
What does it mean to be broken? And what does it mean to be contrite? These are important terms. They're going to be used interchangeably in a different psalm as we go to it in a minute. So it's important to understand these.
Means to be humbled.
Do what?
To be humbled.
Which one?
Broken and contrite, for sure.
Okay, so you want to put them together. If you put them together, we get humble, okay? I can see. Let's do them individually first.
I have a note here that says contrite means to be crushed.
Okay, yes, okay, to be crushed. Okay? What else? What does it mean to be broken?
Hurt.
Okay, so hurt.
To not be whole.
Okay, good. Not to be whole, not whole. We'll put that way. Not whole. Okay? So you two, to be broke down. To be broke into pieces. You may remember when you were a kid and you broke mom's vase? Maybe you dropped it off, right? It broke into pieces. And this is what that word is conveying. To break down, to break off, to break into pieces. That's what it means to be broken. Contrite is a crushing, or literally to collapse. To collapse in both senses. Physically and mentally. Okay? And so David is demonstrating to us this broken spirit. He is broken into pieces. His spirit, the inner man, is broken into pieces. The contrite heart is a collapsing physically and mentally. And so as we'll see, then how then can we preserve our spirit and soul and body blameless? And so we're going to meet our preserved and blameless spirit, soul, and body in the Psalms. And we have to begin with the idea of preserve. I put in the past tense. We're going to put in the present active. Preserve. What does it mean? I'll ask you first to preserve. Don't overcomplicate it. Remember, Bible simple. What does it mean to preserve something?
To keep it.
Okay, yes. Keep it simple. We want to put these synonyms on here because you're going to see them littered through the Psalms. So to keep. What else?
To save.
Okay, to save.
preserve something, you're saving it.
Okay, to save. I'll put it on there. Save.
From spoiling.
Do what?
To keep from spoiling.
Okay, yes, spoiling, to keep from spoiling. Okay.
Sustain.
What'd you say?
To sustain.
Sustain? All right, to sustain. What else?
We're doing good.
All right. To watch. To observe. Anybody want to add any more?
To defend.
Okay. Perhaps to defend. Also to guard. Put it there with that one. All right. So remember, this is where really, these are good words. These are going to be synonyms. You're going to see them over and over and over. And so the preserve makes reference to guard, to keep safe, to watch, to observe. And so in other words, when you go back to 1 Thessalonians 5:23, Paul the Apostle to the church of the Thessalonica is teaching us that the one who is sanctifying is the one who also will be doing the preserving. And so what does this mean? This is what God, as our refuge, offers us through the blood of His Son. You remember the days of Job. Go to Job chapter 1 and verse number 9 and verse number 10. Specifically, we're going to give some context before we do that. I want to put a picture in your mind as we go through this. Then it's going to elaborate, the Psalms will elaborate the preservation nature even more. Look there and verse number 6, and we're going to pay special attention to verse number 10. But notice in verse number 6, as we think about Job and we think about the situation here, and remember in Job in verse number 6 through verse number 10, Satan was walking to and fro the earth and could not find anyone. And so we want to notice as God puts Job's name into the battle and Satan's excuses for why he won't win. And notice here, now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan came also among them. And the Lord said unto Satan, "Whence? Why do you come?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro in the earth, from walking up and down it." And the Lord said unto Satan, "Hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil?" Then Satan answered the Lord and said, "Doth Job fear God for nothing? Hast not thou made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land." We notice here, we pay special attention to verse number 10, the nature of the hedge is similar to the nature of preserving, in which we draw near to God and place ourselves in God's wings, becoming brighter, becoming more empowered because God is light, or because God's light, there is no shadow, there's no variance of turning. And thus he becomes what? According to Hebrews chapter 12 and verse number 29, he becomes a consuming fire. That therefore the world can't even get close to those that are righteous without being consumed by God's light. This should be our attitude as we play our part in God's preserving. What is our part in preserving ourselves? Simply stated, staying close to Him. Staying close to Him. Now as we think about this preserve, we think about this hedge and all of its synonyms for those that are sanctified. Remember, God is going to protect and preserve His people. Our job is to stay in the fence. Stay inside the hedge. How do we do that? That's where we're going to meet ourselves. In essence, we're going to meet ourselves inside the hedge. So let's see it. Go to Psalm 16 and verse number 1. Let's look here. Psalm 16 and verse number 1 as we begin these things. And asking ourselves, How are we preserved? And what should we be doing? Just read verse 1, number 1. What does it say? Psalm 16, 1.
Preserve me, O God, for in thee do I put my trust.
Okay. So here the psalmist in Psalm 16, verse number 1, he says at the very beginning, preserve me. You go back over here, put a hedge around me. Because why? Why can he say that confidently?
He puts his trust in me.
Okay, he puts his trust. This is key. The question is, do you trust God? That's the key to remaining preserved. If I were to give a key, that's number 1. You have to continue to trust in God, regardless of our situations, regardless of our troubles, regardless of our afflictions. We have to remain in trusting God. Look at Psalm 32. Look at Psalm 32. And look at verse number 7. Somebody read verse number 7.
You are my hiding place. You shall preserve me from trouble. You shall surround me with songs of deliverance.
Okay. So here, it describes our hedge as God is our what?
Hiding place.
Our hiding place. He's going to preserve me from what? Trouble. Okay? It doesn't mean he's going to prevent it. He's just going to preserve me in it. He's going to preserve me within my trouble, within the hedge. Notice Psalm 40 in verse number 1 through verse number 11. Look at Psalm 40. And look at verse number 1 through verse number 11. Let's read it. It says, I waited patiently for the Lord, and He inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and established my goings. And He hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it and fear and shall trust in the Lord. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust and respecteth not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. Many, O Lord, my God, are they, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done, and they and thy thoughts which are up to usward, that cannot be reckoned up in order unto thee. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. Sacrifice and offering thou dost not desire. My ears hast thou opened. Burnt offering and sin offering hast thou not required. But notice, beginning in verse number 7. Then said I, lo, I come in the volume of the book. It is written of me. I delight to do thy will, O my God. Yea, notice where the law is. Where is the law in verse number 8? Within my heart. I have preached righteousness in the great congregation. Lo, I have not refrained my lips, O Lord, thou knowest. I have not hid thy righteousness within my heart. That's interesting. Why would he say that? Notice, I have declared thy faithfulness and thy salvation. I have not concealed thy loving kindness and thy truth from the great congregation. Withhold not thy tender mercies from me, O Lord. Let thy loving kindness and thy truth, what? Continually preserve me. God's loving kindness. And what?
Truth
is going to do what? Preserve me continually. It's interesting. When you notice back up in verse number 10, it says, I have not hid thy righteousness within my heart. Meaning what? What has the psalmist done with his righteousness?
Exposed it.
He exposed it. And so as those, if we're going to be preserved, we see that we have to declare it. We have to become it. And so, look at Psalm 61. As we continue to unpack this preservation that God gives us. Look at Psalm 61. And somebody read verse 1 through verse number 7.
Hear my cry, O God, attend to my prayer. From the end of the earth I will cry to you, for my heart is overwhelmed. Lead me to the rock that is higher than I. For you have been a shelter for me, a strong tower from the enemy. I will abide in your tabernacle forever. I will trust in the shelter of your wings. For you, O God, have heard my vows. You have given me the heritage of those who fear your name. You will prolong the king's life, his years as many generations. He shall abide before God forever. O prepare mercy and truth which may preserve him.
So here we see once again, we begin to add the hedge. It's also the hiding place. It's also the shelter. It's also the strong tower. And as we find ourselves in the middle of that higher, that shelter, and that strong tower from the enemy, and even though that your heart becomes overwhelmed, the psalmist is crying out to him in his prayer to keep him preserved, to keep him in the mercy and truth of his will and his word. And so we think about that, and we go to Psalm 64. And we look at verse number, starting in verse number 1. Notice what it says. Hear my voice, O God, in my prayer. Preserve my life from fear of the enemy. And so we think again that the prayer, the preservation, is that God is going to preserve my life. And I think what the psalmist is trying to communicate to us is that we need to go to God in prayer. And the more that we're going to God in prayer, the more we're demonstrating and drawing His attention to the troubles in our lives. Whatever affliction is going on, whatever you're experiencing in life, whatever difficulties you have, God wants us, according to the psalmist, He wants us to connect with Him in some way. And the only way to connect with Him, to show Him that you're interested in staying close to Him, is to pray to Him. Is to get close to Him and get His ear to your mouth. The psalmist was very deliberate about these things when he says, incline your ear to hear. Listen to my cry. In essence is to put your two fingers behind your ear and draw close. That's what we need to do. That is what the psalmist is wanting us to know, is if you want to stay preserved, if you want to stay in the hedge, if you want to, we have to be as close as possible to God as we can get. You remember what James said? He says, draw not near unto me, or near unto God, and God will do what? Draw near unto you. We have to draw near to Him. How do we do that? By staying in His, by trusting in Him, by staying in the truth, relying on His loving kindness, His mercy to preserve us. And when we do that, He is going to do His part. You know, God, we're going to see, look at Psalm 121. It's one of my new favorite psalms. When you start to study things, things become your favorite. But I believe this is a great example of what we're talking about to culminate everything so far. It's a short psalm, but it's very powerful. Pay attention to the synonyms. Pay attention to the preservation of God. And pay attention to how God operates. It's very important. Notice this. Somebody read it, Psalm 121.
I will lift up my eyes to the hills, from whence comes my help. My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. Do not allow your foot to be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. Behold, he who keeps Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve you from all evil. He shall preserve your soul. The Lord shall preserve your going out and your coming in from this time forth and even forevermore.
is powerful when we unpack it. When you see this, I lift up my eyes unto the hills from whence my help comes. In times of distress, where do you look? In times of affliction, where do you look? When you're in sorrow and you're laying upon your bed and your tears are coming from your eyes, where do you look? The psalmist says, I look to the hills. I look up, in other words. I look to God. But notice he says, my help, where does this help come from? The Lord. Which what? Notice the power that he's saying. My help comes from the Lord who did what? He made heaven and earth. Do we not realize, I heard it from Mike, that heard it from someone else, that we have God on our side? That we have God. And he says, now my help's going to come from the Lord, and he is the one that made heaven and earth. And he will not suffer your foot to be moved. Means he's going to keep you stable. Even though that when life becomes distressed, even though that life becomes trouble, even though that life becomes sorrowful at times, grief-stricken at times, heart issues at times, God is going to stabilize you. Imagine that. But notice, he that keepeth thee will not slumber. He's not going to grow tired. And notice verse number 4, we'll put 3 and 4 together. Behold, he that keepeth Israel shall neither slumber nor sleep. Do you know that you serve a working God? Isn't that powerful? Even when you go to 1 Corinthians chapter 12, the proof there in 1 Corinthians chapter 12 is that the Apostle Paul is making a compare and contrast between you used to be as Gentiles were, like Gentiles, because you served these dumb idols. Idols that could not speak. Idols that could not work. But you drop down to verse number 8 and it says that God worketh all in all. Do we not know that God serve, that God is a working God? And that order for him, he's busy. He doesn't grow tired. He doesn't sleep. And so if you want God's attention, what do you have to do? That's a question, sorry.
Talk to him.
You have to talk to him. You have to make supplication. You have to pray. You have to make petitions. You have to request. You have to get his attention. Why? Because he's busy. He's working. And if you don't pray to him, if you don't connect with him, he's just going to go on. He's going to put his ear to someone that's praying to him. And not to you. The reason why we suffer so long in our distress is because we don't go to God often enough. We don't give it to him. He's there to help us, but we don't give it to him. And so, you look at verse number 5, we see that word, the Lord is our keeper. The Lord is our what? Shade. I like that. He doesn't have shade, but yet he becomes shade. Interesting. The sun shall not smite thee day or night, the moon by night. The Lord shall preserve me from all evil. And notice, what is the Lord going to do with your soul?
Preserve it.
He's going to guard it. When you stay within the hedge, when you stay within the hiding place, when you stay within the shelter and the strong tower, when you stay in the truth and the loving kindness, God is going to preserve your soul and keep you sanctified. But that relies on you doing your part. That relies on you staying close to him. There is a small part that we have to play. Look at Psalm 25 and verse number 21. Psalm 25 and verse 21. Look at there in verse 21. And really, look at verse 20 and 21. It says, so keep my soul and deliver me. Let me not be ashamed, for I put my trust in thee. Notice, let integrity and uprightness do what? Preserve me, for I wait on thee. Redeem Israel, O God, out of all his troubles. And so we consider this, that we ought to demonstrate our integrity. This goes back to the inner man, the completeness and staying complete, the uprightness This is what God created us to be. In Ecclesiastes 7:29, He made man or created man what? Upright. And notice when you go back to Job and you read it again now, remember he was perfect and what? Upright and eschewed evil. And God preserved him with what? The hedge. And Satan knew that. And Satan could not touch him. And we think about that. That is also our same preservation. The question, do you have integrity? The question is, are you upright? Let me go to Psalm 25 just for a moment. Nope, Psalm 26. Yes, go ahead.
Real quick.
Yes.
No wonder the way of a transgressor is hard. Because yes. He's outside of the hedge.
He's outside of the hedge. You got it. And so, notice the psalmist in verse number 26, in Psalm 26. Notice what he says. He says, judge me, O Lord, for I have what? Walked in mine integrity. I have trusted also in the Lord, therefore I shall not slide. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my reins and my heart. For thy loving kindness is before my eyes, and I have walked in thy truth. Question. Do we have the confidence to cry out to God and say, judge me. Judge me for my integrity. I have trusted you and I have not slid. Can we cry out to God and say that? Can we say to God, examine me. Prove me. Try me. My reins and my hearts. Can we do that? Something to think about. So, we see all of these things that preserve us. Let me put these up here. Uprightness and integrity. These things are going to preserve us. These things are our responsibility. Is to be upright and to have integrity and to stay in the truth. Stay inside the hedge. So my integrity and my uprightness will aid me in staying close to the source of preservation and refuge. A strong tower, a defense city. When you notice preserved, go to Psalm 37. The idea of preserved in the past tense. Preserved. Look at Psalm 37, beginning at verse 23. Notice what it says. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delighteth in his way. Though he fall, he should not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholdeth him with his hand. I have been young, and now am old, yet have I not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his seed begging bread. He is ever merciful, and lendeth, and his seed is blessed. Depart from evil and do good and dwell forevermore. For the Lord loveth judgment and forsaketh not his saints. They are preserved forever. But the seed of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell then forever. The mouth of the righteous shall speak of wisdom, and his tongue talketh of judgment. The law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. The wicked watcheth the righteous and seeketh to slay him. For the Lord will not leave him in his hand, nor condemn him when he is judged. And so we see this in the Psalm 37, that they're preserved. That God's judgment will preserve them if we stay in the hedge, if we remain righteous and faithful in truth. And continually will preserve us. We consider the spirit, because we're preserving our spirit, our soul, and our body. The spirit, as Mike has been talking about in the Proverbs class, the inner man. There's an inner man that is constantly battling for position. The old man is battling to get back into position. The new man is trying to suppress him and ultimately, eventually kick him out. And this battle goes on and on. Romans 7 teaches us that Paul had an internal struggle. And so we're trying to devour this old man. Look at Psalm 34 as we consider the spirit, the inner man. Psalm 34. And somebody read 17 through 22. Psalm 34:17-22.
The righteous cry and Lord heareth and delivereth them out of their all of their troubles. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a broken heart, and saveth such that meet a contrite spirit. Many are the affliction of the righteous, but the Lord delivered him out of them all. He keepeth all his bones, not one of them is broken. Evil shall slay the wicked, and they shall hate the righteous, and shall be desolate. The Lord redeemeth the soul of his servants, and none of them that trust in him shall be desolate.
Once again, we see the psalmist pointing out. Now here, remember, in Psalm 51, David was confessing what?
Sin.
His sin. He was confessing his sin. And the sacrifices that God desired was what? A broken spirit and a contrite heart. Or maybe it's the other way around. Let me see. it's reversed. That's what I was saying. Here it's reversed. So here, in Psalm 51, it was a broken spirit and a contrite heart. Now, in Psalm 34, it is a broken heart and a contrite spirit. It's reversed. But here we want to notice some things. We want to notice the difference there. There's not any sin going on here. But yet, the psalmist finds himself in what? Verse 17, he's in trouble. There's some troubles going on. Verse 19, there's affliction going on. We see that? And so, it's not, once again, even though that we're sanctified, even though that we're striving to be preserved, it doesn't eliminate life's struggles. But yet it gives us a way to deal with them positively. It gives us a way to draw closer to God. And this, I think, is the greater point here, is when we go through struggles and troubles and trials, even in joys, is to get us what? Closer to God. That's what it's trying to do, is get us closer. That when we rely on Him, and thus it demonstrates our true trust for Him. And so I think this is a great psalm. When you see once again, the psalmist is saying the Lord is what? Notice the closeness in verse number 18. The Lord is nigh unto them that are of a what? Broken heart. That is broken into pieces. And save us such that be as of what? A collapsing spirit. A collapsing inner man. And God wants you to take that. And remember what David said? What? Created me a clean what? Renew a what kind of spirit? A right spirit within me. And thus when my life becomes in pieces, God is saying, come to me, get close, and I will put you back together. I'm reminded of when you break a limb. To break a limb is better than to sprain a limb. Because when you break it completely, it can heal back twice as strong. When you sprain it, it just hurts all the time. And so here, he's saying, I want you to be broken. And when you come to me, I'm going to draw close to those in times of brokenness. But once again, God is working. Once again, that you have to call attention to Him so that He knows that you're broken and that He can fix you. That He can make you upright and He can make you better and make you whole again. And so verse 22 teaches us the Lord redeemeth the soul of His servants. He's going to continue to buy you back. Continue to buy you back. Continue to buy you back. This reminds me of the object lesson that Hosea was trying to teach the children of Israel. But yet, if we just remain in the hedge, it makes life a lot easier for us. Even though it seems the great paradox is that even though we're in trouble, even though that we're in affliction, life is still much easier in the hedge. When you consider Psalm 77, and look at verse number 1 and following, Psalm 77, as we consider still the spirit, the inner man. Look at starting at verse number 1. Somebody read 1 through verse number 12.
I cried out to God with my voice. To God with my voice, and He gave ear to me. In the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord. My hand was stretched out in the night without ceasing. My soul refused to be comforted.
Okay, hold on just a second. In the day of his what?
Trouble.
What did the psalmist do?
He reached out to God.
He sought the Lord. Okay? Go ahead.
I remembered God and was troubled. I complained and my spirit was overwhelmed. You hold my eyelids open. I am so troubled and I cannot speak. I have considered the days of old, the years of ancient times. I call to remembrance my song in the night. I meditate within my heart, and my spirit makes diligent search. Will the Lord cast off forever, and will he be favorable no more? Has his mercy ceased forever? Has his promise failed forevermore? Has God forgotten to be gracious? Has he in anger shut up his tender mercies? And I said, this is my anguish, but I will remember the years of the right hand of the Most High. I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember your wonders of old. I will also meditate on all your work and talk of your deeds.
Hmm. So here is the psalmist. What picture do we get here with the psalmist? Let me just ask you.
Reminds me of Habakkuk.
Okay, in what way?
Just asking hard questions about God.
Okay. It's interesting that sometimes man can be stubborn. And here, the psalmist, it seems to me that he's being stubborn. And that in the day of my trouble, I sought the Lord, but my sore ran in the night and ceased not. My soul refused to be comforted. And so it becomes difficult. And so here, once again, I remembered God. Isn't it at times that when we get to a low point in the carnal thinking that we forget God? It's easy to do. It's easy to forget. And so the psalmist here, he remembers. He remembers that he was troubled. And I complained, and this reminds me of Habakkuk too, because Habakkuk had a couple of complaints. But yet, the end of it is, what did he come to the conclusion? After he recalled to remembrance the song of the night in verse number 6, after he communed with his own heart, and after his heart, his spirit, the inner man, the conscience, made diligent search, what was his conclusion in verse number 10 through verse number 12?
He would remember what the Lord had done for him, what God had done.
So when we're in distress, when times get difficult, we ought to commune with our spirit. Our conscience is going to meditate, and what's going to bring us to the conclusion, once again, back to all the great and marvelous works that God has done. And that He's going to get me through that. And He goes on in that psalm to look at the God's greatness and goodness of all the things that He did of old. And so I think it's very important for us, once we, yes, it's okay to ask questions to God, is it not? It's okay to go on to them. I don't understand why I'm having this difficulty. I don't understand why I just get up in the morning and I just want to cry. You know? And Carmen and I were talking about one time about men and women are very different. And that men don't understand the idea of hormones. And that sometimes hormones, they just come and the only thing you can do is cry. They're just there. And sometimes, man, we don't understand that because ours just kind of go away on a gradual scale. But theirs just flood in and flood out until finally they go out completely. But it's interesting that at the end of all that, the psalmist says, I will remember the works of the Lord. Surely I will remember thy wonders of old, which clues us in to a coping skill. A coping skill that even though that we're distressed, afflictions, trials, whatever it is, that we can go to God and we can remember all the great things that He has done for us. Specifically for us, He sent Jesus. He sent His only begotten Son. He sent Him to shed His blood, and Jesus freely gave it up. And so we think about that. Look at Psalm 143. Psalm 143, and let's look at verse 1 through 10. Somebody read verse 1 through verse number 10, Psalm 143.
Hear my prayer, O Lord, give ear to my supplications. In thy faithfulness answer me, and in thy righteousness. And enter not into judgment with thy servant, for in thy sight shall no man living be justified. The enemy has persecuted my soul. He hath smitten my life down to the ground. He has made me to dwell in darkness as those that have been long dead. Therefore is my spirit overwhelmed within me. My heart within me is desolate.
All right, stop there. What is going on with this psalmist here? What condition is he in?
Persecuted.
He's being persecuted. And so he says he's been persecution. He has spit my life down to the ground. He's at a low place. He has made me to dwell in what? Darkness. As those that have been long dead. And so what is the spirit? What is the inner man's condition right now? What's the emotion?
Despair.
Despair. He's overwhelmed. His heart within him is desolate. Okay, continue. Verse number 5.
I remember the days of old. I meditate on all thy works. I muse on the work of thy hands. I stretch forth my hands unto thee. My soul thirsts after thee as a thirsty land. Hear me speedily, O Lord. My spirit fails. Hide not thy face from me, lest I be like unto them that go down into the pit. Cause me to hear thy loving kindness in the morning, for in thee do I trust. Cause me to know the way wherein I should walk, for I lift up my soul unto thee. Deliver me, O Lord, from my enemies. I flee unto thee to hide me. Teach me to do thy will, for thou art my God. Thy spirit is good. Lead me into the land of uprightness. 11.
No, that's fine. So, when we think about this idea, and what his coping skill was, he is in a condition. And I noticed in verse number 7, I wonder if you heard it too, that he hear me speedily because what? The inner man, the spirit, did what? It failed him. It's failing him and continues to fail him. And he says, hide not thy face from me, lest I be like unto them that go down to the pit. And says, cause me to hear. So he has to go into a deeper part. And the deeper part that he's going into is the soul. He's going into the mind. He's going into the soul. Something different. Something, the newness of life is going into a place that has to control and enslave it to bring it out of it. Because, once again, our inner mind, our inner man can fail us. And so we have to tell it what to do. How do we tell it what to do? It's by going into the soul, the true condition, the man, the thing that God gives us, the breath of life, the mind in which to discern things, and to talk our inner man, get back up, get going again. It's not over. And so then he goes on to say, teach me again. Teach me to do thy will. And so once again, he has to go back again and to renew his mind. How often should we renew our mind?
Daily.
To renew our mind day by day. And he's saying, now I need you to renew me again. Renew the inner man. My soul is lifted up to you. I'm not going anywhere, but I need your help to teach me and to renew my mind. So I can get out of this mess, this persecution. Even though it's coming, even though it's there, even though it's coming, he says, I know that you will lead me because your spirit is what? Good. And of course he says in verse number 11, quicken me, O Lord, for thy name's sake, for thy righteousness' sake. Bring my soul out of what? Trouble. And of thy mercy cut off my enemies and destroy all them that afflict my soul, for I am your servant. And so once again, the psalmist teaches us, as we preserve our spirit, our inner man, sometimes it needs some help. Go ahead.
Going through this demonstrates to me how impatient we are and how Jesus is in the patience possession of your souls.
Yes, Luke 21:19.
Mm-hmm. And when we consider, it takes time to go into your soul.
Amen.
It takes time. And when we become affrighted, when someone does something to us that we may not like, immediately we go into this defense mechanism instead of remaining in the hedge.
That's right.
We start to protect ourselves instead of staying in the protection mode of the hedge.
That's right.
And keeping in mind Matthew 10, verse 28, Jesus said, "Fear not him that can destroy the body, but fear him who can destroy both body, soul, and hell." Mm-hmm. So it's a mentality that has to remain all of the time. And when we find ourselves in despair, this is when I have a brother or a sister who is remaining focused, and they see me not remaining in the head and say, "Hey, get back."
That's right.
So they admonish me. Amen. They restore me. They encourage me. And so what you're saying, I mean, it makes more sense that you're saying it than what's in my head. I'm just talking, trying to make sense out of this.
No, that's right. That's absolutely right. That we have to go into the soul. We have to go into it. And sometimes, like you said, it takes some patience to go into it. Let's talk about the soul for just a moment, as time is escaping us, but it won't take that long to get to the body, because the body's pretty easy. It's been littered. If you've been listening, you've seen it. The bones have not broken. Or in Psalm 51, his bones were broken. He was waxing. It was sorrows. All of this is applying to the body internally. But look at the soul. Look at Psalm 103. Oftentimes, the soul is described as nephesh. And nephesh is back in the Hebrew language, it was all used as one soul. It was all used as one thing. And so it can be the breath of life, or it also can convey the mind. Okay, can convey the mind. And so in Psalm 103, as we consider that, this is a psalm that considers the soul as mind. It says, "Bless the Lord, O my soul, and all that is within me, bless his holy name. Bless the Lord, O my soul, and forget not all his benefits." Do we see that? You see, if it was a soul that was just a breath of life, then it has no thinking or reasoning. It's just the breath of life. But here, it is the mind, because it says, forget what? Not all thy benefits. Okay, so his soul, he doesn't want his soul to forget anything, which would to me, the context would bear out that it's talking about the soul in reference to the mind. Notice verse number 3. "Who forgiveth all thine iniquities, who healeth all thy diseases, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with thy loving kindness and tender mercies, who satisfy thy mouth with good things, so that thy youth is renewed like the eagles. The Lord executeth righteousness and judgment for all that are oppressed. He made known his ways unto Moses, his acts unto the children of Israel. The Lord is merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and plenteous in mercy. He will not always chide, neither will he keep his anger forever. He hath not dwelt with us after our sins, nor rewarded us according to our iniquities. For as the heaven is high above the earth, so great is his mercy toward them that what?" Verse number 11. Goes back to what Mike has been teaching all this time.
Fear
him. Mm-hmm. You see that? So these things are consistent with what we're teaching, that we have to fear. And notice as it continues, "As far as the east is from the west, so far hath he removed our transgressions from us. Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. For he knoweth our" what?
Frame.
"He remembereth that we are from the dust," or "we are dust. As for man, his days are as grass, as the flower of the field, so he flourisheth. For the wind passeth over it, and is gone, and the place thereof shall know it no more. But the mercy of the Lord is for everlasting to everlasting, and upon them that what? Fear him and his righteousness unto the children's children. And so, don't forget the benefits. And once again, the benefits, we have to remain in the hedge. And one of the primary benefits next to trust is to do what? Fear him. Look at Psalm 104, verse number 1. We'll just look at verse number 1. Same concept of the mind. Bless the Lord, O my soul. O my God, thou art very great. Thou art clothed with honor and majesty. Let's get two passages here. Stephen, go to Proverbs 19, verse 2. I'm going to borrow from Mike for a minute in the book of Proverbs. And then let's look at Psalm 139, verse 14. Psalm 139, verse 14, coupled with Proverbs 19 and verse number 2. Somebody read Psalm 139, verse number 14.
I will praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Marvelous are your works, and that my soul knoweth very well.
Okay, my soul knoweth right well or very well. Now read 19, verse 2.
Also, it is not good for a soul to be without knowledge, and he sins who hastens with his feet.
What is it not good for a soul to be?
Without knowledge.
Without knowledge. Once again, making reference to the mind. When we think about those two coupled passages together, thy soul knoweth very well, and that it knows. It has knowledge. It's mind. But the mind of the soul needs to echo what mind? The mind of Christ. That's why life, there's freedom within the hedge. When you pen some cows in the hedge, the reason that we pen the cows in the hedge is that if they get outside the fence, what's waiting for them?
Danger.
When Noah built the ark and he's in the ark, what's outside of the ark?
Danger.
Okay? And so we stay beside this hedge. What's in the hedge is freedom. Freedom to operate, freedom to move. And our soul is to gain knowledge. Knowledge of the mind of Christ. And with the mind of Christ, we have freedom. Why? Because we're upright, we're integrity, we're fearing Him, we're loving, we're truth, we have trust. All of that is there. These things continually to preserve our spirit, our soul, and our bodies. Look at Psalm 116 as we wrap up. Two more passages and then the lesson will be yours. Look at Psalm 116. Notice what we see here. It says, I love the Lord because He hath heard my voice and my supplications. So here the psalmist is teaching us that God does what?
He hears.
He listens. He listens to us. Here it is again. But He hath inclined His ear unto me. Once again, bringing His ear close. Therefore, when I call upon Him, as long as I live, notice His condition. The sorrows of death compassed me. The pains of hell got hold of me. I found trouble and sorrow. And notice what He did in those conditions. Somebody read verse 4.
Then I called upon the name of the Lord. O Lord, I implore You, deliver my soul.
Did you see that? What a coping skill. This psalmist is in a sad and painful condition. He's depressed. He's the sorrows of death. Maybe he's sick. Maybe he's diseased. Maybe he feels his life is closing in. Maybe the pains of this pains is so great. His affliction and sorrow is broad. But yet, he's not concerned with the physical. What is he concerned with?
Spiritual.
The spiritual. Isn't that interesting? That oftentimes we're too concerned with the physical that we forget what needs to be preserved. Is it not the spiritual that needs to be preserved? Look there, verse number 5. Gracious is the Lord, and righteous, yea, our God is merciful. Notice, the Lord preserveth the what? The simple. I was brought low, and what did the Lord do? He helped me. He returned unto thy rest, O my soul. For thou, the Lord, hath dealt how?
Bountifully
with thee. For thou hast delivered my soul from what? And my tears from and then my eyes from tears, and my feet from falling, and I will walk before the Lord in the land of the living. I believed, therefore have I spoken. I was greatly afflicted. I said in my haste, all men are liars. And what shall I render unto the Lord for all the benefits toward me? I take the cup of salvation and call upon the name of the Lord. I will pay my vows unto the Lord now in the presence of all his people. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. O Lord, truly I am your servant. I am your servant, the son of your handmaid. Thou hast loosed my bonds. And he goes on to say, I will offer sacrifices of thanksgiving. I will call upon the name of the Lord. And so I think ultimately when we think about preserving, we see in order to preserve blameless, we allow God to do his business. We allow God to work. But in order to stay in connection, we have to pray. And I think the overall, the general theme of today's lesson is that in order to be preserved in spirit, soul, and body, we have to draw close to God through prayer. We have to connect to God through prayer. We have to draw his attention from our working God and say, just for a moment, God, let me give you my trouble. Let me give you my affliction and preserve my soul, and I know I can get through it. I think that's the message for us all. And even though that Jesus was in a great affliction in the Garden of Gethsemane, he went from standing to kneeling to on his belly. But yet God still preserved him. Isn't that a great example for us all? Stay within the hedge. Any questions or comments?
Corey, I was thinking of when you were reading that last Psalm 116, Luke 7.
Mm-hmm.
When he was talking about that woman that was forgiven much. And he said, but whom little is forgiven, the same loveth little. But she loved much.
Mm-hmm.
The broken and contrite heart who has been mended or that has been made whole trust more too. I just wonder if the same could be said about trust.
Mm-hmm.
When you're broken and that one that comes and mends it and fixes it, makes it whole, you trust them more. You mm-hmm. trust them with everything without question.
Mm-hmm.
But if you feel that there is some sense of doubt there, if there's some reason you feel that they can't help, they can't mend, they can't make it whole, then you doubt. And
yes.
The psalmist to me seems that because he was broken and was mended, it feeds into his trust.
That's right. Because when I teach trust, there's four windows. This is an open window. This is hidden. This is blind. And this is unknown. And this whole windows turn upon trust. And what you're saying is absolutely true. It's because what we have not done, and maybe we have done it, but not maybe have done it as well as we could have, is that we have not created enough experiences. If this is God, I have not created, this is just surface, this is just, you know, I know, maybe you like maroon shirts. I mean, we can sit here and talk about surface things. But we have not created enough experiences to drive this point home. And so what you're saying is that the mending of the relationship, the ones that have worked hard, the ones that have been broken, the ones that are very difficult over here is things that I know about myself, but no one else knows about me. The same thing can be said. I don't get from here to here without trust. And here, really the unknown, as we think about in the spiritual perspective, is God. I'm trying to do it on my own. But when I finally break down and realize that I can't do it on my own, then I start to create discoveries or shared experiences that create trust. And this is what goes to what Brother Bonner was saying about, well, that's why we have to be in each other's lives. Because if I can go from here to here, say, it was me and Stephen and I created an experience together, and we're growing in God together, we created trust. And now, once again, you have the three cords that cannot be broken. And that could be with husband and wife. That wouldn't be anything. But we have to develop it, but we don't trust enough. Because when you go to put in your notes Psalm 18:30. Psalm 18:30 is the formula for trust. I use it all the time what I'm teaching, because there's two things that we're looking for when we look for trust. Let's just go there and then I'll end with this. Look at Psalm 18:30. What does it say?
As for God, His way is perfect. The word of the Lord is proven. He is a shield to all who trust Him.
All right. So once again, if you were to want to develop trust, then number one, you're looking in life who has been tried. His ways have been tried. So God's ways have been tried over and over and over and over. Plus, His words are what?
Proven.
Okay? We put this in our layman's terms, is that my actions and the direction I'm going in life must match up with the words that I'm expressing in life. And when I do that, that's going to create safety. That's going to create trust. And by demonstrating that to people, then you demonstrate that they can trust God too. Does that make sense? So, Proverbs 18:30. All right. Any questions or comments? All right.